Development Director. This position develops and implements a yearly fundraising plan, ensures we meet our revenue goals, and develops promotional and press materials. The ideal candidate will have at least 4 years proven development experience in the nonprofit sector and strong annual report, newsletter, and grant writing skills. KBOO is an affirmative action employer. Women and people of color are encouraged to apply. To apply, email a resume and cover letter to developmenthire@kboo.org. Deadline to apply is Monday, October 21st at 5 p.m. For more information, go to kboo.fm.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Resilience in Action, a fundraiser of Living Yoga on Saturday, October 19th at 4:30 p.m. at the Eleanor in Portland. Living Yoga's mission is to foster healing and resilience through trauma-informed yoga. They provide 35 weekly trauma-informed yoga classes in corrections and reentry, addiction treatment and recovery, and community health programs throughout the Portland metro area. Resilience in Action fundraiser features live storytelling, a panel discussion, drinks, food, a silent auction, and more. Again, that's Resilience in Action, a fundraiser for Living Yoga on Saturday, October 19th at 4:30 p.m. at the Eleanor, 1605 Northwest Everett Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
We will not bow down to racism.
We will not bow down to
injustice.
We will not bow down to
exploitation.
Why don't you tell me no? I'll just do all of it.
I'm gonna stay.
Opportunity, you in jeopardy. Yo, yo, set me free, don't hinder me, let me be.
I'm fighting for freedom, I got the heat in case you need them. A straight soldier, ain't nobody told ya.
We've been together since I created border. The African border celebration is in order.
My only chance of being free is to fly within me, and it's illegal to kill a freaking eagle. A bird is never more important than my people. I guess we didn't need him, so I took away his
freedom.
This time you've been telling us these lies.
are listening to The Struggle here on KBOO 90.7. This is Olivia.
This is Alyssa. That show, that song that was just on is from 1995.
Hey, before I was born.
The Panther soundtrack to the movie about the Black Panthers that year. And it's about 50 black women rap and R&B artists from the 90s.
I actually never heard that song, and I'm shook that I didn't know about it.
You need to learn that song.
I know, you've never shown it to me. I rely on you for these kind of things.
So, yeah, you can depend on me for all things 90s hip-hop and R&B. Okay, so...
You really can.
There's a lot that's going to be happening this upcoming week, so I want to make sure that people know about all of the events that you can choose from to get out into the streets and to help people who are in the struggle.
Yeah, if you're serious about fighting back against racism, white supremacy, colonization, climate change, and you hear this show and you want to get plugged in, listen up and be serious about taking up those tasks. So one of the events that you can go to in the coming week, October 20th, so in 2 days on Sunday, Portland is the event, Portland Hip Hop Against White Supremacy, with a variety of hip-hop acts from the city. On October 20th at 7:30, there will be this event that is to bring awareness and fight for justice for Larnell Bruce, who was a young black man murdered by white supremacists in Gresham. And the foundation that's putting on this event was founded by his parents to help pass stronger punishments for hate crimes in Oregon. And all the proceeds will be going to help Larnell's family to help them fight that fight, go out and support local hip-hop artists and the family, most importantly, the family of Larnell Bruce. October 20th, 7:30 p.m. at Bit House Saloon, Sunday.
There's a documentary about that that Adele Femme, who's down with Don't Shoot Portland, made, and it's called, is it Made in Oregon or State of Oregon? It's called State of Oregon. And it documents the trial and the politics around Larnell Bruce and the white supremacist group that killed him. So I hope people look into that, and as always, support Don't Shoot Portland and the Black Lives Matter movement. There's a rally for a fair contract tomorrow. This is by the Burgerville Workers Union. So the Burgerville Workers Union, shout out to y'all, friend of the show, has been fighting for some time against the place with the great milkshakes that I have not had in years, and I might not ever have again, because the boycott continues. So the Burgerville Workers Union continues to reject the idea that because they're in fast food that they're supposed to be stuck in poverty and precarious, dangerous working conditions, which has come to be understood as normal and fair for people in low-wage jobs. I don't think so. So tomorrow is a rally for a fair contract. That is at 11 a.m. Up to 2 p.m. It's going to be at the Salmon Street Springs. That's 1000 Southwest NATO. And there's going to be a march. So come for the rally at 11. And then we'll head over to the Hawthorne Burgerville to either celebrate a fair contract or start escalated actions against the company during the lunch rush. This is from the Burgerville Workers Union. At the end of September, after more than 1.5 years of bargaining, Burgerville workers delivered an ultimatum to the corporate office. Sign a fair contract by midnight on Friday, October 18th, or we will severely escalate our actions against the company and be prepared to strike. On Saturday, October 19th, we will come together in anticipation of Burgerville's corporate decision to either sign a fair contract with significant wage proposals or continue denying Burgerville workers the dignity and justice they deserve. We will meet at Salmon Street Springs by the Hawthorne Bridge on the west side of the river at 11 a.m. to publicly announce Burgerville's decision after a series of speeches and performances. Then we'll head over the Hawthorne Bridge to either celebrate a fair contract by publicly ending the Burgerville boycott or start our escalated actions against the company during the lunch rush to demand that they sign a fair contract immediately. And again, that's tomorrow. at 11 a.m. at Salmon Street Springs. That's 1000 Southwest NATO. And we'll be marching over to Burgerville on Hawthorne.
Yeah. Burgerville has until midnight tonight. But we know they won't do it.
If you go to, if you know people at Burgerville, if you go there, call them and let them know. Sign the contract.
If you know them. October 26th, Inner East Side Community Conversations with Commissioner Joanne Hardesty at SEIU.
Cable Family, Joanne Hardesty. Used to have a show here before she was
What was her show?
Oh my God, I can't remember the name of the show, but it had to do with police accountability.
Mm-hmm, of course.
Like, yeah.
It's at SEIU Local 49. Saturday, October 26th, 9:30 a.m. to 12 p.m. on Saturday, October 26th. Joanne will host the third in a series of four community conversations at the SEIU Local 49 Ballroom. It's a solutions-oriented event series that aims to bring Portland residents together around concerns specific to their neighborhood and community. They ask you to bring your best ideas about what you want to see from Portland City Council. So if you want to go to this, really, really think about what you're going to bring. Bring some hard-hitting questions about the issues that are affecting your community, and if you feel the need to, put them on blast and come with what you think are the solutions, community-based solutions.
So when and where? One more time.
October 26th, Saturday, 9:30 a.m. at the SEIU Local 49 Ballroom.
So people should also know that at any time, if you ever see police officers beating somebody up, doing something that you know that they're not supposed to be doing, you can send video that you take directly to Joanne Hardesty. You can add her on Twitter, or you can send it to her email, because she wants to be able to see all of this as she continues to critique Portland police.
Yeah, we have to continue to hammer home that this is not an issue with a bunch of bad apples across the country and across our state. It is a systemic issue. And so the more you bring light to that, the more we can hammer that home.
You know, Alex Vitale, they played earlier on Cable just like an hour ago, a clip from his book, The End of Policing.
Yeah.
And you were on a panel with him recently. Well, it wasn't the same panel.
No, they were different panels. Your panel was
Friday night.
But what was the theme? It was ending policing, and I think mine was building the world without policing. I felt good about mine. It was very good. It was very inspiring. I got a lot of, he had a lot of good things to say. The main thing that I liked how it was phrased was that things like anti-bias training, right, implementing community policing, I say that in quotes, even if it does make some small changes in certain communities, really all it does is work to tell people that we can change what policing is, and it serves to legitimize the system of policing. So we actually, these little reforms that may marginally cut down on police violence in certain communities, overall actually serve to empower police to continue to perpetuate violence, because we can say these are just bad apples, which really opens the door for more of the violence that is inherent to policing, even the things that are not as outright, like the things like what we're going to talk about today on the show. Incarceration itself, policing itself, fining people for minor infractions itself. Those are things that are inherently violent. Read Alex Vitale's book.
Yeah, The End of Policing by Verso Books, Alex Vitale, V-I-T-A-L-E. In that vein, because your panel was at the Dismantle Change Build Center, where Care Not Cops, which we're both participants in, is going to be hosting Narcan training and harm reduction workshop tomorrow. And the Dismantle Build Change Center is at 14 North Killingsworth. And this is going to be at noon, 12 p.m. up to 2. And this is from Care Not Cops. Join us Saturday, October 26th, for our third workshop in Care Not Cops' Building Beyond Policing series. This is for Narcan training and harm reduction workshop presented by PPOP, the Portland People's Outreach Project, and Care Not Cops. The training will be accompanied by a conversation around harm reduction and the criminalization of drug use. Lunch will be provided. The Portland People's Outreach Project, or PPOP, is an all-volunteer organization in Portland that provides clean syringes, naloxone or Narcan, and other harm reduction supplies directly to users. So people can go to portlandpeoplesoutreach.org and check out Care Not Cops on social media. Lunch will be provided. The lunch will be at 1. The event starts at 12 to, you know, mingle and settle in, get an introduction and all. And the location is wheelchair accessible, and there is a gender neutral ADA bathroom. So people should know that from Care Not Cops. And also they want people to know that there is fluorescent lighting and forced air heating and folded metal chairs along with couches. So they want people to know that for accessibility reasons. Mm-hmm. So you can also contact carenotcopspdx@gmail.com if you have any more questions about accessibility in particular. And again, this is for Saturday, October 26th, 12 to 2. This is a Narcan training for harm reduction workshop at the Dismantle Change Build Center by Care Not Cops.
Wonderful. Next is also October 26th. Put Socialists in Power.
For the love of God.
Please, somebody do it. One person's trying to do it. This is a fundraiser for Shama Sawant of the Seattle City Council. Melissa and I are very familiar with Shama, and we support her.
She does not get the credit she deserves.
She really doesn't. Yeah, she's out here like really doing the whole thing. And people don't talk about her enough. People don't know about her enough. People don't talk about her enough. She, at the time she was first elected, was one of the first so openly socialist, not democratic socialist, socialist.
Yeah. She came out of the Occupy movement.
Mm-hmm. City council members to be elected to a city council in the U.S. in, I think, over a century. She was responsible for some of the marginal success of the blocking of the Amazon headquarters. In Seattle,
it was a valiant effort.
It was,
and the city council did vote in favor to tax them, but then 2 weeks later they took it back.
No, yeah, there was a win, and there was a lot of people behind that win. Shama and Socialist Alternative and other activists in the city, Black Lives Matter activists in the city, were at the helm of the Block the Bunker movement to stop the building of what was going to be a multi-million dollar, one of the largest, most high-tech police stations in the country, and squashed it and got some of the money that was going to be used, reallocated to affordable housing. And this is not just one woman, right, but a woman who is actually very specifically, directly using her power to push people into the street and gives a significant, significant amount of the money she makes from city council to the struggles of working people. So this fundraiser for Shama, for her, because she's up for re-election again, is Saturday, October 26th, at 915 Southeast Hawthorne Boulevard in Portland. And this is That's Lucky Lab Brew Pub on Hawthorne. It's going to be a fun social fundraiser for the Socialist City Council member who's fighting for the interests of working class people everywhere. There will be speeches from local organizers and a chance to mingle and talk about how Marxists and activists can use electoral politics to build our movements. Help re-elect her. City Council member who won $15 an hour is fighting for rent control and a Green New Deal. And what happens in Seattle has implications for working and oppressed people everywhere, including here in Portland. A person you should be supporting, right? There, we should think critically about how much of our energy goes to electoral politics, but this is a person who is not just the lesser of a few evils, but is actually fighting on behalf of the struggles that truly matter to building a better world.
And is constantly calling out the other people on the city council.
And gets dragged for it and keeps fighting
back. So, you know, people who are sort of I don't know, middle of the road Democrats that have some progressive veneer on them are constantly getting called out by her because they will tell you all day long that they're part of the resistance and therefore justice and peace and all of this. But you look at who's funding them, where they're getting their money from, who they're loyal to, and it's pretty clear. And Shama makes it real spicy, and she's constantly calling them out. And if you people pay attention to Seattle politics.
And if you look at the, and again, if you look at the wins and look and hear what we just said about her, this is a person who is actually, right, Seattle is being, and is continue, will continue to be horrifically gentrified and is being, and has been taken over and is constantly being affected by the existence of Amazon and Starbucks. But Shama has mitigated to a certain extent the effects of the austerity and gentrification and development in Seattle, and yeah, is doing the thing that a lot of politicians say they're doing and isn't.
So there's another thing that's happening that the like I said, y'all, there's a lot happening, so if you're not keeping up, I'll post all of these events in the show notes on kboot.fm. But there's another one that I think is really important for people to go to and to be thinking about. It's called Trade War or Cold War.
Ooh.
So, yeah, it's really spicy. This is being hosted by the Oregon Fair Trade Campaign, Portland Jobs of Justice, and the International League of People Struggle. And the question of Trade War or Cold War is about China and the U.S. relationship with China because of all of the ratcheting up that people are hearing about China, quote unquote, not playing fair. And it is something that people are going to have to be thinking about a lot more and more as their economy continues to grow and the U.S. economy continues to shrink. Empires typically don't like that.
No.
So
crumbling? No, they don't.
So this is a question of, this is from the International League of People Struggle, one of the hosts. It says, going beyond the headlines and hearing from frontline voices, workers, colonized people, and others whose voices have been drowned out by the pro-corporate and pro-militarist media as the two superpowers escalate tensions. So this is going to be hosted at SEIU 49. And again, that is Monday, October 28th from 6:30 to 8:30. So I'm glad that this is happening because it is not nearly covered enough, and like the organizers say, like when it is, it's covered by the corporate media who has vested interests in U.S. capitalism thriving and beating out Chinese capitalism. But you know, the workers in both places ended up getting squashed and should have solidarity with one another and not be loyal to their respective countries, if, you know, I say so myself.
You have a lot more in common with working people across the world than you do with people of the same national identity. That's called nationalism. And it's
and good luck with that.
And we'll see what happens. We'll get back to you if we hear any updates on the effects of nationalism.
I've heard it doesn't work.
I've heard interesting things. I don't know. Maybe we can do an episode on it.
Try internationalism, sweetie.
International working class solidarity. Thank you. Next, October 29th, 7 p.m. It's a Tuesday. Hosted by Jewish Voice for Peace and Portland Democratic Socialists of America, DSA. Journalist Youssef Al-Jamal on the crisis in Palestine. Come here, Youssef Al-Jamal, Palestinian journalist, writer, and translator, contributor to Gaza Writes Back, and English translator of Dreaming of Freedom, Palestinian Child Prisoners Speak. Al-Jamal reports frequently from Gaza. He is on a national speaking tour organized by Just World Educational to talk about the humanitarian crisis in Gaza, the treatment of Palestinian children under Israeli military detention, and the role of Israeli settler colonialism, co-sponsored by a large group of radical organizations in the city, including KBOO. Accessibility, the main entrance is located on Southeast Belmont Street between 54th and 55th. Through the courtyard at the top of the stairs, there is wheelchair access to the right, and two all-gender restrooms, which are on the main level past the sanctuary. This is an event that I think you should definitely go to, especially living in the United States. We are constantly fed a racist, Islamophobic, pro-empire, pro-imperialist narrative on what is happening in Israel, and are constantly told that Israel is the one true democracy in the Middle East and one of our most important allies, when really one of the most horrific genocides in the world is happening mostly to children who live on that land, who are indigenous to that land, and we're all being tricked and duped into thinking that Israel is a legitimate state full of culture and full of culture and democracy and peace, when it actually is absolutely not. It's a farce. It's an illegitimate settler colonial state, and you should go learn more about it and think about joining the fight to free Palestine.
Free Palestine.
We give Israel $40 billion a year.
Way more than that. Oh my God, 40 million?
Wait, no, billion.
Oh, billion, yeah.
Is it 4 billion?
I
think it's 4 billion a year.
The part that you brought up that hit me was that there are so many children in detention.
The majority of the people who live in Gaza are children.
So.
And these are people who are living in open air prisons, who are going to jail for simply acting the way that you would if your home was being occupied, if you saw people's houses being torn down, if your family members were being killed. These are children who are being put in jail for speaking out, for fighting back, for living for living on the land that they are entitled to, that they are born on. And it's one of the few issues where you see, it's one of the few issues where there can be such a staunch split amongst people who all allege to be on the left, which is really interesting, because when you describe what's happening in Palestine and describe the origins and what Israel has done to kind of legitimize its power, it sounds a lot like the land that we live on and what's happened in the U.S. and the U.S.'s role and orientation to indigenous people and how we all got here. And yet some farther left people who would allege to be liberal and who are liberal do not think that somehow fighting for Palestinian people is anti-Semitic and is pro-terrorism, is pro-violence, is all of these things that have
a lot of those people will come around.
Mm-hmm.
So the same thing happened with South Africa,
mm-hmm.
and their fight against apartheid, mm-hmm. too, where people around the world needed to be educated,
mm-hmm.
Because they just don't know, because the information that they get fed is one-sided. So that's why I'm glad that this event is happening, so that people can learn more.
Yeah.
And South Africa ended their apartheid, and Palestine will also end their apartheid. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So yeah, you should go.
Yeah.
October 29th, Tabor Space, hosted by Jewish Voice for Peace.
The day after that, Wednesday, October 30th, at 5:30 to 7:30 at the Multnomah County Central Library, Portland Grocery Workers, Lessons of the 2019 Contract Fight. So there are going to be people. Well, this is presented by Retail Workers for a Democratic Union and Socialist Alternative Portland. And this is what they say. Calling all Portland grocery workers and community supporters. After a year of bargaining, an overwhelming vote of workers in favor of striking, and a brief public boycott, a tentative agreement has been reached between the grocery corporations and the union UFCW. And this is, of course, I don't know why they didn't put it on here, but this is about Fred Meyer. The agreement contains some improvements in worker pay and benefits, but is far less than workers have been demanding, and many feel much more could have been won with the right strategy.
Mm.
Is this the best contract grocery workers could have won, or was more possible? If so, how? What would the strongest fight back would have looked like? What lessons can we draw from the contract battle, and how we build the strongest movement of workers going forward? The next contract expires in less than 2 years, so we need to get ready now. What do we need to do to win the best possible gains for grocery workers the next time around? Join Retail Workers for a Democratic Union and Socialist Alternative for a discussion on these and other related issues and discuss concrete plans for rank and file organizing in the year ahead. Again, this is co-hosted by Retail Workers for a Democratic Union, RWDU, and Socialist Alternative at the Multnomah County Public Library, the central location at 801 Southwest 10th Avenue in downtown Portland from 5:30 to 7 o'clock. This is a public meeting and it's free.
Very good.
Yeah.
And with that, those are all the events you can attend in the coming week, 2 weeks, and I hope that you get to go to one of them. Moving on.
Or all, if you know, or all, if you got at least one. If you got the time and the money.
If you have the money to take off work, go to all those things. Bring your friends with you.
Or if you're one of these trust fund kids who I keep seeing around the town.
You're pissed.
When I speak to them, they tell me that they just like live off of their parents and they're enjoying Portland.
Where are you meeting these people?
My class antagonism is raging, like on Hawthorne.
Well, yeah. They're always here. It's the most rapidly gentrifying city in the country. People come here to be cool. Oh. Most of the people I know. That's not true. I shouldn't say that.
Most
people I meet have moved here to be cool.
Well, be cool and support all of these people who are doing work in the community that are trying to get the word out about all of these good things that Olivia and I just said. I'm not saying give all your money away.
I am.
Oh, Olivia's saying give all your money away.
Yeah. If you, it depends on how much money you have. You should probably give it away if you're living that comfortably.
We can get into brass tacks if you want to.
I would love to.
I'll ask them how much their trust fund is for.
Give it to me.
And then you can decide how much they should
take. Or become a member.
No, but you know, if you have the time, then you should be supporting all of this stuff.
Yeah. If you have the time, there's a lot of people who would be doing this but don't have the time. So if you have the time, you should be doing it for yourself and for the other people who are wage slaves like me.
Yeah. And a lot of these people, even though they're like class enemies, you know, like their parents are very rich, they don't think like their parents do. No. So if they're open to our ideas, then let's radicalize them. If you're a trust fund kid and you're listening right now,
make friends with a trust fund kid. Turn them on to this show. Make them think it's cool. I don't know.
And then we'll get them to fund our movements.
We're like the political two dope queens. You seen that podcast?
No.
Oh, it's like a podcast with some woman whose name I always forget, and then Phoebe Robinson, who's the less famous one. And they're two black women comedians who are like vaguely political, and they are pretty popular. But we're like them, but better.
Well, shout out to them.
Shout out to two dope queens.
I'll listen to the podcast.
It's fine.
Okay.
Anyway, we wanted to talk about, on this show, similarly to our last show, another shocking, wrongful police murder. Oof. In Fort Worth, Texas. This time, the person who was killed is 28-year-old Tatiana Jefferson, or Tay Jefferson. She was playing video games with her 8-year-old nephew around 2:30 in the morning in the house that her sick mother lived in. And it was a warm, breezy night in Texas. And so their back and their front doors were open. Their neighbor called the non-emergency police line to ask for a welfare check because he knew his neighbor was sick. He did not call because he thought there was a robbery. He did not call because he thought somebody was hurting anybody. He called so that somebody could check on his sick neighbor. The police chief directed that these officers go into this as if they were a SWAT team. So they roll up. They have their flashlights out. They do not announce themselves. Tatiana, or Tay, hearing that there are people outside of her house, I think gets her firearm, goes into a different room, stands near the window, and the police look in that window and they say, put your hands up, and in 0.6 seconds They shoot her and kill her. Her 8-year-old nephew is near her on the other side of the room. They then go into the house, I think, somehow and obtain video of the firearm in the room so they can use it as evidence that she had a firearm and was a threat. However, did not go over well. The police chief and the mayor of the city abnormally criticized them, expressed their alleged outrage, and the officer, whose name is something Dean, Aaron Dean, was arrested on murder charges. but I mean, this 28-year-old woman is dead, and she was literally just playing video games with her nephew. This is, I think, the 10th police murder in the Fort Worth, Dallas area this year, and the 7th since May. And it's kind of has people in a intense outrage across the country and in the area because it's very similar to Botham John, whose killer just got 10 years, but he was also similarly sitting in his own apartment eating ice cream. And I mean, I think the lesson here, what I hope that people are getting out of these stories, is that these police murders that we continue to see are really not a question of what the person is doing. They are a question of the function and power of police. And police feel empowered to murder people, no matter what they're doing. If you're black, if you live in a certain kind of area, then this institution is taught to target you and to defend the legitimacy of the state, not to ask intelligent questions about the people that they're interacting with.
Why do people think that this murder is linked to the police finally having a conviction on their hands of one of their own? Like that they're lashing out.
Why do people think that?
Yeah.
I don't know. I think that I know the police in this area are especially irresponsible and reckless from what I've heard compared to other police departments, which isn't saying a lot. And the Amber Geiger case is one of the is pretty much the only significant conviction of a police officer for murdering somebody that we've seen in recent history. And I think that the police in this area are maybe trying to assert their power. Police see themselves as being connected to each other and having solidarity with police officers, not as being a part of the communities that they're supposed to be protecting in theory, which is kind of why a lot of people will gawk and laugh and poo-poo the idea of community policing, because it doesn't make any sense, because policing is not about community, has never been about community, and only serves to trick people into allowing police into their community more than they already are.
I have a book on community policing models that is a read that I'll give you, where it lays out from a sort of consultant's point of view how to best implement community policing models. What I get from the 5 years now since the Black Lives Matter movement started, that whenever this comes up, the people who advocate for this are usually people who stand to benefit financially from it, because it in every case puts in a new class of like gatekeepers, people who are responsible for the community side of community policing. But for many people who pay attention to this kind of stuff, they see community policing as being primarily a new function of snitching. Mm-hmm. So everybody is expected to trust the police more, so that you give them more intelligence so that they can better surveil and and target people who live in a community. And they do this by trying to sort of ingratiate themselves to people in the neighborhood to make them feel like they can trust them. But the information goes one way. It's not like the police are gonna tell you about what they're working on and everything that they know about the police.
Yeah.
And oh well, yeah, there are some really bad cops inside, and we're investigating them. And I just wanted to give you an update. No, that doesn't happen with community policing.
Yeah.
The intelligence goes one way, and it's you giving all of the information about your neighbors to the police.
Yeah. The question is always, and we've asked this before a lot on the show, like where if it is a matter of bad apples, if it is a matter of just police not knowing their community, not being integrated enough into their community, not being trained enough and anti-bias, and then where are the bad officers, or where are the good officers when the in quotes bad officers kill people? Because even here we have the police chief coming out and condemning this, but I don't see police I don't see police officers around the country coming out sharing their condolences. I don't see police officers from this area coming out alongside the chief and saying that this person was wrong, because police don't actually feel an allegiance to their community. And like Alyssa is saying, the only reason that they would like to get closer into the community is so they can better control populations, protect property, and create wealth for the people who run the city. Policing creates a lot of wealth, especially in communities that have populations that are particularly marginalized.
And a lot of those communities, it's like the only well-paying job around.
Yeah, I was just very... This is one of the few cases, because I think I know a lot of people who are just kind of very used to seeing these stories, including me. And this is one, not that I'm not outraged, but I'm used to seeing it. This is one of the few stories where I was very deeply disturbed and to my core in a long time. And I think it's just because it is hammering home, like, that stratification between this entity and the communities that they're in.
Tay's sister was on Democracy Now! And she interviewed with Amy. She said that she found out about her sister being dead
from her son,
who told her that his aunt got shot and was dead.
Yeah, it's like if police forces are meant to protect and serve these communities, like where is
the service
for this child? Who, like, how does that happen? How are you putting a child in a position to where they are comforting their mother, to where they are the first person to give her this news, where she hasn't been contacted, hasn't been thought of, where he hasn't been contacted, or where he hasn't been thought of outside of just funneling him into a place to go after he's seen his aunt killed by the police? Or like with Philando Castile 3 years ago, the child in that case was also just an afterthought, who was literally thrown into the back of a police car with her mother, who's just watched her boyfriend be murdered in front of her and is taking up the emotional burden of something that is traumatic, so deeply traumatic, even for an adult. This has nothing to do with community. Police do not protect your community. If you feel that the people in these situations were threats, which, like, there's no conceivable way that you could, if this is really about community protection, right, then there would be the thought and service to the people who are affected by the violence that they've witnessed to the people in these communities who are allegedly like experiencing violence. But it's not about that. It's about it is about the controlling of black and brown bodies, the controlling of poor bodies, the creation of wealth, the protection of property, and sometimes enforcing that really these people have no power.
And it looks like it really could just be a way to let
people know
who's in charge. So, oh, you got one of ours convicted, mm-hmm. is going to go to prison. Then suddenly there's mm-hmm. an uptick in black people who are being killed.
Yeah.
In that area.
Yeah.
That's why I asked you that earlier. Like, you know why people are
yeah,
saying.
I guess I'm forgetting the kind of the timeline in terms of both of John and...
And the conviction.
And this murder, yeah. Because yeah. he was killed a while ago. Yeah, I mean, police are brainwashed people. A lot of people on the left will say, oh, if... not a lot, but some people on the left will say that the police are working class just like us, and if they were to just put down their arms and join us, then... they would see, like, no, police are people, the people responsible for locking up black people en masse for drug use, people responsible for like breaking up communities, for dividing communities so they can conquer them, the people responsible for putting brown children in cages for trying to find a better life with their families, the people responsible for the daily murders of disempowered people across this country, and they don't feel any solidarity with you. And like, there are pillars of their job where they are where they profit and benefit off of taking people in and locking them up. When police get, like, when police take reports and find drugs and take that to their office and file them away, they get paid for that. The police are being paid to control our communities. And are people who have been brainwashed into having a sick need for violence and power, for doing violence against these communities, for having power in these communities, and are frequently protected by their peers and by their bosses when they do so. And so I think that what you're saying does make sense, of like, these people feel like the community that they're in is somehow taking their power away. Because the police chief and the other officers did try to protect Amber Geiger because she was one of them. So, yeah.
If I can, I'll try to get some of the local reporting on, like, local community radio and what activists are talking about in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, just so that we can be more clear about it if we have an update for it next week.
Yeah.
Then also, Cyntoia Brown was interviewed this morning by Amy Goodman on Democracy Now! Also, and she has been free for a while and has a new project coming out that she wants people to check out. It's called Free Cyntoia, and she is talking about how she was ravaged by the criminal justice system. So, like, after the interaction with the police, which sounded like it was brutal enough, at 16 years old she was convicted and faced life in prison, and we find out that the people who were part of her program inside to try to make sense of her own life and give her hope for a better future and educate her were people who were responsible for her appeal, voting on her appeal, and then ended up like voting against her. And the horrendous backstory, which if you don't know, she was trafficked by a boyfriend who made her sell sex as a minor. Mm-hmm. And then when she had a scuffle with one of her violent clients, mm-hmm. she killed him in self-defense and mm-hmm. ended up in prison. And she retells her story of redemption. Mm-hmm. And I suggest that people listen to that. That's on the KBOO website, kboo.fm, and also democracynow.org to listen to the entire story.
Yeah.
So we have 7 minutes. Do you want to go through the events that are coming up one more time so that people yeah. can know about what's happening in the community?
We have Portland Hip Hop Against White Supremacy on October 20th at Bit House Saloon, Sunday at 7:30 p.m. For raising money for Lauren Alberts' family and their efforts to fight hate crimes.
I just realized that all of the events, they're all in Portland, and I know mm-hmm. that there are people outside of Portland who mm-hmm. also are listening. Mm-hmm. And if there are any community events that you want people to know about, you can send them in to mm-hmm. KBOO and just make an attention to the struggle with Olivia and Alyssa. Mm-hmm. And I'll read off of the flyer or the event page as you send it so that mm-hmm. We're not so Portland-centric, mm-hmm. but all of the events that we have this week are in the city. The other one is Rally for a Fair Contract by the Burgerville Workers Union. That's going to be at the Salmon Street Springs. That's 1000 Southwest NATO Parkway. And there's going to be a march over to the Burgerville on Hawthorne. And this is going to either be a celebration for the signing of a fair contract by the Burgerville Workers mm-hmm. Union and Burgerville, or there's going to be an escalation mm-hmm. Of the boycott and related actions against Burgerville for refusing to share the wealth. Yes, Burgerville is a tremendously successful company with very good PR. Mm-hmm. Who has
natural, healthy,
local,
grown, yeah. very Oregon. I loved Burgerville growing up.
Yeah, when I first moved to Oregon, I was like, oh, this is so good. We don't have like good burger places like that yeah. in Jersey. I think the best thing that we have is like Five Guys
is better than Burgerville and is better than In-N-Out, I would say, but that's a different conversation.
Anyway, I really liked Burgerville when I came here, but since the boycott was called, I haven't had any yeah. and I might not ever have any again if they don't do the right thing.
Oh yeah, that was my spot in high school. There's one near my high school. Anyway, but yeah, we're not doing that anymore until they get a fair contract, until their conditions are better, until they have fair wages, until they stop being horrific racist sexist managers and bosses. October 26th, Inner East Side Community Conversations with Commissioner Hardesty.
October 26th.
Saturday, October 26th at 9:30 a.m. at SEI Local 49.
That's the service employees.
I grew up on the West Coast and I have a vocal fry.
No, it wasn't that. No, you sounded like such an announcer.
October 26th.
October 26th.
I'm getting comfortable and adjusted in my role as your co-host.
Oh, and I want to say also for people listening, when you hear Olivia cough, I am not gonna hit the cough button because people send in notes about this.
They do?
Yeah, and then the last time we were here, somebody brought in a cough drop, and I know that people are just yeah. showing care, but no, we're not gonna hit the cough button. Olivia,
I have cystic fibrosis.
Yes, some people who have something to say, have cystic fibrosis, have to cough, clear their throat, get their phlegm out, and Olivia's going to be doing that every week.
I know you think that we're just up in the hospital not doing anything, just sick and dying, don't have anything to do with our lives, but some of us actually have something to say and do, and I'm here, and I'm going to cough on the microphone.
All right, so on the 26th.
Inner East Side Community Conversations with Commissioner Joanne Hardesty, SEIU Local 49, community conversations about issues in our dang community. It's a, quote, solutions-oriented event series that aims to bring Portland residents together around concerns specific to their neighborhood and community. We ask you to bring your best ideas about what you want to see from the Portland City Council. I'm serious when I say, really think about what you want to say if you're going to this event and put them on blast. Record it, put it on your Facebook, because we should understand that events like this are important and can be helpful, but that it's going to be actually be community solutions that are being grown and led within our communities, not from the top down, not from the city council down.
Yeah. Well, and also, if you can't get there on Wednesday morning, city council meetings Wednesday morning at 9 o'clock, mm-hmm. then this could be an alternative for you to get the counselor
accessible for working people. So this is your chance to let them know what's going on in your community. RSVPs are required for entry. So there's a link on the Facebook event to RSVP. Again, the event is called Inner East Side Community Conversations with Commissioner Hardesty, October 26th, 9:30 a.m.
And then finally, just because we're pressed for time, the Narcan training and harm reduction workshop at the Dismantle Change Build Center. That's by PPOP, the Portland PPOP. People's Outreach Program project. Excuse me. They do clean needles, and now they're going to be doing Narcan training for people who have friends, family, loved ones who use, and you don't want them to die.
So, yeah, people who use drugs are actually human beings who deserve dignity. Can you believe?
I can believe.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Yes.
They don't just deserve to be dead on the street or locked in prison.
What do you know?
But actually, maybe if they are given resources and opportunity and help and care and love, maybe they would have better lives and be given access to human dignity.
Mm.
Maybe.
Mm.
We'll see.
That's Care Not Cops.
Care Not Cops.
And the Dismantle Change Build Center is 14 North Killingsworth. So check that out. Thank you, everybody. This is The Struggle with Olivia and Alyssa.
Woohoo! All right, good night.
Good night. Oh my God. This is Alyssa Pariah, your friendly neighborhood agitator, the host of The Struggle, every Friday from 7 to 8 p.m. Listen to KBOO Community Radio, 90.7 FM, and online at kboo.fm. The Struggle is where organizers and activists doing good in the community come to discuss their work, to get you to support them, maybe even join them. Remember The Struggle, every Friday, 7 to 8 p.m., KBOO Community Radio.
Join me every first and third Friday from 8 p.m. until 10 p.m. From The Grassroots, where we agitate for social change with music and political commentary. We will ease your troubled mind with licensed mental health counselor Cheryl Jefferson, political analysis provided by the Prophet of Rage, and calling in from the planet of rhythm and blues, musicologist Professor Soul. From The Grassroots, I'm your host, Lanita Duke, on 90.7 FM, KBOO in Portland.
Hello, I'm Eugene Rashad. Join me every Saturday from 2 p.m. to 5 p.m. for the best in jazz on your community radio station, KBOO 90.7 on your FM dial.
But I dig, and I know you dig, because I got 4 requests for this thing already today. Strutting right with it.
That was KBOO volunteer disc jockey George Page. Page has been playing jazz and popular black music on KBOO for the past 12 years.
What I do to the audience I draw, hopefully, is to please them with all types of black music. Mostly what you can't hear as a rule on larger black-oriented stations in L.A. or San Francisco. I play a lot of blues and a lot of jazz. All of it's black-oriented, but it's not the cuts you're going to hear on the other jazz shows. It's not the cuts you're going to hear on other stations, because other stations just don't play jazz and blues in a black vein the way I do here.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor in Evening with Ken Stringfellow on Saturday, October 19th from 7 to 9 p.m. at the Hollywood Senior Center in Portland. Ken Stringfellow, founding member of the Posies, performs songs from his 30-year career as a musician. This night features songs and stories from his work as a solo artist, as well as Neil Young, Big Star, Robin Hitchcock, and much more. Again, that's an evening with Ken Stringfellow on Saturday, October 19th from 7 to 9 at the Hollywood Senior Center, 1820 Northeast 40th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
It's so unbridled with the hope that someone's reading.
KBOO Community Radio is having our annual book and record sale on November 23rd, 2019 to raise funds with support from the Willamette Week Give Guide. The sale will be located at Lagunitas Portland Community Room at 237 Northeast Broadway from 12 p.m. until 9 p.m. From classic books to coffee table books to cookbooks, treasures will be waiting for your discovery and just in time for the holidays. Enjoy community music, activities, and a live broadcast from KBOO at the event. Proceeds from the sales will support the station's operations. Right now, KBOO is